Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show with hosts Phil Huff and Julie's away this week. We have in the studio guest host, Jim Healy.
I'm fake Julie.
Well, you don't look the same, but you're every bit as chipper. So,
Well, don't forget, this isn't a visual medium. A good morning, Phil. Good to be here with you.
Yeah. How was your weekend?
Let's see. We ended on Saturday our season of company. August was a busy stretch of family and friends, and our last group pulled out on Saturday, and so we spent the rest of the weekend collapsed.
Ours continues on until Labor Day.
I know that we have friends in our little lobby here. Do you want to introduce them?
Well, we have a small entourage of
groupies.
Couple of my assorted sisters and mother, and soon an adventurer friend you'll enjoy meeting after the show.
Assorted sisters?
Yes, assorted. Two of three.
The two of three. Excellent. So how was your weekend?
It was great. We got a great hike in and took a few people to a special spot that I'll just leave unannounced because usually it has great huckleberries, but they're getting a little dried out right now.
Well, I'm heading up tomorrow. I'm not going to say where, but I haven't gotten out much this season, and I've heard that we could do well with some of what Texas has been getting, the rain, and because I went out once already, and the berries needed some plumping. You know, they were starting to wither, but when they start to wither, Phil, they're sweet.
Oh, they are. No, when they get a little dried out, they concentrate that sugar and juice. They need to do that pretty quick because it's been so hot and now so smoky. The smoke's settling in on the berry plants. And we will talk a little bit about that. Coming up today, we have a high of 93. The forecast simply says haze. And tonight, more haze with a low of 59. We repeat tomorrow with 90s and 50s and haze and haze. Then Thursday, it starts off haze and then sunny.
Now, does the haze keep down the temperatures? Because yesterday I was really surprised. It didn't feel very hot.
I think it keeps down the daily high, but it keeps the overnight temperatures up a little bit, too. It traps a little warmth.
Okay, it traps some warmth. Okay.
Flattening everything out, as it were. We're going to talk a lot about what's going on outdoors with our first guest. We've got a pretty packed show this morning. We're going to have, for the first half, Jim Mellon, author of the Trails of the Wild Selkirks and Trails of the Wild Cabinets, revised editions both. And then we'll take a music break and we'll bring in Stephen Bond Garvin, who will talk about the historic Sandpoint Walking Tour. I think we're calling this our walking, talking, and writing morning.
I won't have to go over to the health club then.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
So, Jim Mellon, well known to many of our regular dedicated listeners, but to those who are new in town, tell us a little bit about your personal biography, how it is that you have a background and interest that lends itself to the trail guides.
Well, I'm 68 years old.
No.
And I'm an avid outdoors person. I just feel most comfortable outdoors. And I first became interested in hiking, I think, when I was 3 or 4. My first real hike was in Washington, D.C., believe it or not. My brother found a trail that led from our apartment building, and it overlooked Bowling Air Force Base. Mm. And I was just thrilled that, you know, you could walk through there, and you went to this great vista. So I've been hooked ever since. And so I've lived in this area for 42 years, and I'm an avid hiker and biker, runner, winter sports, court sports, and all that. So, and big gardener. So, yeah.
Well, we sure appreciate your passion for the outdoors and what you've been able to bring to the rest of us from your experiences through the hiking guides. Tell us a little bit of the background of the two books.
Well, my wife and I met Dennis Nichols out in the wilderness. I think it was 2001. And we kept bumping into each other out in the Cabinet Mountains wilderness. And finally, Dennis said, well, we should just, you know, plan on doing some hikes together. So we started that, and it turned out we were very compatible. Dennis and I were, our chemistry was kind of such that we didn't use a lot of caution. So we ended up with some exciting adventures. One of them is at the front of the Selkirk book where I took Dennis and we sort of initiated him to the Selkirks. So after Dennis passed away, Chris Bessler, the publisher of Keoki, asked me to, you know, to carry on with the books, and I was really honored to be asked to do that, and had no experience whatsoever, and I thought it would be a rather easy task, and you know, you can't like I tell people, you can make hundreds of dollars as an author of a regional book.
Over the span of 10 years, hundreds of dollars.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
So tell us about the books, and maybe take the one of them first. There's more than just trail information in them. There's great stories and resource guides, and the one you just alluded to is the tip of the iceberg, so to speak.
Yes, you're talking about the Cabinets book?
Yeah, let's start there.
Okay.
No, the Wild Cabinets.
The Wild,
Wild Cabinets.
Can I back up? And
sure.
Are the cabinets, why do they have the adjective wild in front of it? Oops, silence.
Why? Well, because they are wild. You know, in particular, the Cabinet Mountains Wilderness has been a wilderness since the Wilderness Act was enacted in 1964. And it's just a wonderful place. I cannot imagine why anyone would be opposed to wilderness. I mean, you just drive to the trailhead, you hike out there, there's solitude, there's untrammeled wilderness, and you can sit there and imagine that the landscape has not changed for
a gazillion years.
Since the last ice age, or mm-hmm. maybe several ice ages. And, you know, I think in this, especially in these days, we need that. We need the kind of solitude. We need to go out there and, you know, sometimes in our troubled world, if you listen to a lot of news, it's stressful. And when you get out there in the wilderness and you look around and you think, hey, you know, everything seems okay. And it's a really it's a healing thing.
And this is the third edition. What has been the changes in the editions?
Well, I've added a few trails. This one, this edition has 100 trails in it, and it adds 11 new ones. The second edition added some trails and some other information, such as the GPS coordinates for each trailhead, because most people have a GPS, or they have a program on their cell phones that enable them to find these trailheads. The most recent edition of the Cabinets has a lot of information regarding mountain biking as well. It used to be that in the trails surrounding the wilderness that you could ride your mountain bike all the way to the wilderness boundary, and you've never been able to use a bike in the wilderness. But now it's very complex, and now you can ride some trails to a certain intersection, but not beyond that. Most of the trails that enter the wilderness, you cannot even ride a mountain bike on. But there are exceptions, such as Rock Lake. You can ride your bike all the way to the wilderness boundary, which is maybe a quarter of a mile from the lake. I've never seen anybody ride up there, but...
But you could.
Could.
How do you decide which... Because the new trails you're adding aren't trails that have been newly built. They're trails that didn't make the previous edition, for the most part, right?
Right. Well, you know, I mean, Dennis picked most of the low-hanging fruit, but there's still some really nice trails. I mean, we added a section, a whole drainage, the Grouse Creek drainage, and that's really nice up there. I mean, you don't get the spectacular, high rugged peaks, but it's just wonderful country, and that enables you to access the whole. Boulder Creek drainage as well.
So I'm really curious about the trails that didn't make it. Are they just not as good, or are you holding back on a few gems you just don't want to share?
No, I'm not really holding back. Really, for me, the fun begins where the trail ends. And for instance, the cover of the new Cabinets book shows Libby Lake, one of the Libby Lakes, and there are no trails there. And there's an interesting story behind that. I took my wife up there a few years ago, and this was a hot, hot summer day, and in the afternoon we're scaling this really steep west facing slope, and Sandy may have been having a few hot flashes at the time, and she was overheated, and when we got to the lake, she said, "I will never come back here again." 2 weeks later, we were back. And a month later, she took a friend there. And so the photo on the cover of the third edition is one of Sandy's photos of her friend, and that's at Libby Lake.
How do trails get numbered? I was looking through the index, and I see no rhyme nor reason. How do they get numbered?
I don't know. That's entirely up to the Forest Service.
So you don't get to number them?
No.
How many trails would you guess would be for future editions? Are there a number of trails that have not yet been plotted out in the book?
I think we have most of the good ones now. However, I was mountain biking a bit this summer in the Purcells, which are not, not in either book. But there are some wonderful trails up there. And I thought, perhaps I should talk to Chris Bessler and we should have a Trails of the Wild Purcells.
The Wild Purcells.
But then I slapped myself and it's like, no, don't do that to yourself. But that's really nice up there.
So how do you decide when it's time to revise an edition?
Well, that is entirely Chris Bessler makes that call. He'll send me an email or call me and say, we're running low on books and, we could probably do with some revisions and so forth. So I'm like, okay. So it's been a great relationship with Keoki Publishing. They're just wonderful people to work with. And Chris has said a couple of times, he said, we really should sign a contract here. But we never have. I trust him and he trusts me. And we just, he's a great guy.
But you're always collecting data in the field. I've seen you with your notebook.
Well, I do. I take a lot of pictures and I record tracks with my GPS, and I think about what could be added to the next edition, and there are always corrections. Honestly, these books are not perfect. You could spend, and I spent probably too much time trying to make them as accurate as possible, because I hate to see somebody get out there and get lost and frustrated and so forth.
I'm sort of curious. I looked through. You have trail lengths and different features, crossing water, the sweat index. How do you come up with the sweat index?
Well, it starts out from, from no sweat, which would be, we have these, a few family-friendly trails, which are, range from, a half a mile to 2 miles with very little elevation gain, all the way up to, there's I think Buckets of Sweat is the top one, and that would be where that might be a 6-mile, 7-mile trail with 4,000 vertical, something like that, something like maybe Scotchman Peak trail. That's a 3,700 vertical gain, and most people sweat quite a bit going up there.
Do you have a top 10 list in the book, like your top 10 favorite hikes? Or if you do that, then those trails would get busy, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I do not. And I'm a little bit conflicted about these books. It's like I've led a lot of hikes for the Scotchman Peaks and Idaho Conservation League and Montana Wilderness Association. And, it's really cool to take people to a special place and just see their reaction. I've never seen anybody in the wilderness who thought that perhaps this should not be protected. That means that there's more traffic. But hopefully people read the book, and we have a section on Leave No Trace. And hopefully people will leave the trail and leave the area as clean as they found it.
That's one of the wonderful things about the book, is it gives some hands-on information for folks who might be new to hiking or new to the area, the Leave No Trace etiquette, as well as a general overview of the communities and of the wilderness issues in both the mountain ranges. So I want to remind listeners that we're talking this morning with Jim Mellon, author of Trails of the Wild Cabinets and Trails of the Selkirks. This is 88.5 KRFY in Ponderay.
You mentioned, Jim, that there's sort of like damned if you do, damned if you don't. You want to share this, but then you don't want it to be like a super highway up there. In your years of hiking, have you noticed more traffic?
In particular, the Scotchman Peak Trail it has gotten a lot of use and a lot of poor etiquette regarding the mountain goats. So there's a section in the back, a new section in the back of the book, written by Sandy Compton on feeding or not feeding wild animals. Keep them wild. Mm. And there's a couple other sections in there on the history of conservation efforts in the cabinets and also on possible expansion of the Cabinet Mountains Wilderness by Doug Farrell.
It's nice to have the division because the two ranges are really so unique in their geography and their hiking opportunities that instead of one big book, I know going into the field, it's nicer to have a little slimmer Trails of the Wild Cabinets or the Selkirks. How do you decide?
Wild Selkirks.
How do you decide on a given weekend? Do I feel like a cabinet today or do I feel like a Selkirk when you get up to go somewhere?
You know, honestly, my wife Sandy and I have, we've been all packed up and in the car and driving north, and we get to the Y, and we still don't know if we're going to the Selkirks or the cabinets. It's how the spirit calls you. It's hard to decide. It's like being a kid in a candy shop. You know, there's so many cool places, and there, you know, there's some that I don't really talk about very much. I don't really mention very much, and even if I post some photos on Facebook of a really super special place, I don't really mention the lake.
You have mentioned Sandy, and I do know from personal experience one of the things that seems to be growing over the years is the amount of trash people leave behind, regardless of the Leave No Trace etiquette. And I want to applaud Sandy for always having a trash bag along with her. Have you noticed that? Have you seen an increase in backcountry abuse?
No, I really haven't. And I know I was with one friend a few years ago, and he... Well, actually, we were on different trips, but I ran into him at the at one of the lakes there at Rock Lake, and he was digging through the fire pit, and he pulled out probably old cans that had been there since the 40s. So people like that are great. So I honestly really have not seen any additional abuse to the trails or the region.
We're here at 88.5 KRFY talking with Jim Mellon, co-author of Trails of the Wild Cabinets, third edition that has new trails and information about mountain biking. Where can one get a copy of this book, Jim?
Well, you could get one. I know they carry them at Outdoor Experience on First Avenue. I think Vanderford's has some. You could buy them directly from Keoki Publishing. They're on Church Street between 4th and 5th Avenue. You can even find them on Amazon, where you could probably find anything else in the world.
Do you have a favorite season to be out hiking in the mountains?
No, I don't, really. I really like every season equally.
Tell us about Straight Up Joe.
Straight Up Joe.
Yeah. Well, tell me, first of all, who is Straight Up Joe?
Well, this was, I think Sandy Compton came up with this. And Straight Up Joe has a hat size of 4, I believe. Not too bright. And he doesn't really believe in switchbacks, but he just likes to tear up straight up a mountain. And I used to ride horses a lot with Sandy, and the horse I rode did not understand switchbacks either. It's like if you're going up the mountain, just go up. Don't do this back and forth stuff.
So as the story goes, I think Straight Up Joe laid out a lot of the trails, at least in the Wild Cabinets.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. But you know, if you go up to British Columbia, like we went up to Fisher Peak, which is up near Cranbrook, the trails up there are much steeper. There was one trail that I think it gained almost 2,000 vertical feet per mile.
Ooh.
I mean, you're almost on all fours. So when you come back here, you know, these don't seem quite so bad by comparison.
So there's a lot of lookouts in the area, a lot of former lookouts, lookout sites, and a few that are still existing. Any favorites amongst those?
Oh no, I like all of them, and most of them are you'll find you know, old boards and nails, and almost always a mattress up there, or springs up there, and the wire that they used for communicating, you know, to report fires.
Mm-hmm. Are these all day hikes, or are there some extended hikes?
Oh, they're definitely, you know, some extended. You can backpack. You could spend, you know, in the complex of, you know, the Cabinet Mountains Wilderness. You could link trails together, and you could be hiking for weeks in there.
For someone who might not know where the cabinets are, can you sort of like give a brief description of their geographic locale?
Well, they start in Idaho, and they cross into Montana, and the majority of the cabinets are in Montana. Cabinet Mountains Wilderness is east of the Bull River Highway, and it continues way down beyond Thompson Falls.
Oh, that's a chunk of distance.
Yes.
Yeah. When you have two states covering the geographic locale, here you have Idaho and Montana, does that complicate things getting done because you have two bureaucracies to work with?
Well, in the case of the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, spans two states and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. three counties and a couple of Forest Service jurisdictions. So it's, you know, to get everyone on the same page is definitely a challenge.
Yeah, the land management question is, but the writing of the guidebook, you can write in Montanaese as well as Idahoans, right?
Ah, they speak the same language, huh?
That's right. Although in Montana, you have to change the creek to crick. But other than that,
there are some regional differences. So tell us too about the Selkirk Range.
Oh, the Selkirks are—they're another wonderful one. And people ask me what's my favorite, and I don't know. It's just hard to say. But the Selkirks go way, way to the west as well. And there are—I have to say—quite a few trails in the Selkirk books that I have not been on. I mean, that book has 200 trails, and Trails of the Wild Cabinets are 100. So if you if you hiked one trail, you know, if you went out every Saturday, summer and winter, you would be like 6 years before you covered all of those trails. And so it was a vast undertaking to do the Selkirk book, for sure.
So your favorite trail probably is whatever one you're on at this present moment.
That's yeah. Exactly right.
That's excellent. We're here go ahead.
I was going to say, or the one with the ripe huckleberries.
Are you telling us any, giving us any clues?
Well, I did find some last Saturday. Went up and did, in the Selkirks, with the running group, we went up and did Long Canyon.
Ah,
and so up
okay.
near the top, up near Pyramid Pass is about 6,600 vertical, and there were some big fat ones up there, but that's a ways to go for a few berries.
And speaking of berries, and we've talked about goats, we'd be remiss to not touch on bear education and what people should and shouldn't do in bear country.
Well, the Forest Service requires that people, treat their food properly. In other words, you can hang your food from a bear tree. That needs to be up about 12 feet at least, and about 4 feet from the trunk of the tree. Or you could use a bear canister, but that's a good requirement because the saying goes, "A fed bear is a dead bear." And once a bear obtains food from a human, then they forever have that association, and they can become a problem bear.
And you want to make sure not to disturb them, especially at this time of year. If they've got their nose to the ground in a good huckleberry bush, you don't want to surprise them.
And they're moving around. There's a lot of activity on the trails, isn't there, with the bears, because they're looking for food for their long winter ahead.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, my wife and I have been out in the woods a lot, and we've encountered a lot of bears, both black bears and grizzlies, and never, ever a problem. However, you know, and people ask us about, what about bears? What about bears? And but I'll tell you what, a cow moose with a calf is not something to be messing with. And, you know, the moose that hang around town have a pretty mellow temperament, and I think people might be lulled into thinking that.
I've wondered about that, yeah. Because with the moose mm-hmm. around town here, given that moose probably are right among the top two animals in the wilderness to be really paying attention to.
Yeah, I've spoken to more than one wildlife conservation officer who says that he or she have carried their bear spray for hundreds of trips into the backcountry, never used it on a bear, but have pulled it out and used it on a moose more than once.
Interesting.
So bear spray is an effective deterrent for a wide range of animal situations you might find yourself in.
And probably humans, too. You're on my trail.
Any last-minute anecdotes or thoughts for us, Jim?
No, I can't really think of anything. I mean, my favorite, my favorite trip and destination is probably A Peak in the Cabinet Mountains Wilderness. It's the second highest peak. And from there, at the summit of that, you can look down on Granite Lake, and it's literally 4,000 vertical below. And it almost looks like you could, dive off of there into the lake. But I'm not going to try that.
No. So you finished the two books, long weekend coming up, Labor Day weekend. Do you set out now starting to research for the next one, or are you going to take a little rest?
Oh, I think I'll take a break. I don't know. The Selkirk book is probably due for a third edition coming up soon. But I'll wait for Chris Bessler on that one.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Jim, and we wish you good hiking in the days ahead. Once again, we've been talking with Jim Mellon, co-author of Trails of the Wild Cabin. It's third edition. Get a copy. Yeah. And are we going to do a musical interlude?
We're going to do a short song. Thank you for joining us, Jim. We've got a Donovan song that seemed appropriate to the day. There is a mountain. This should bring back a lot of memories for Donovan fans and for mountain fans. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Stephen Bond Garvey about the historic Sandpoint Walking Tour.
Walking Tour is excellent. Well, this is walking themed.
But right now, a little bit of Donovan. Then there is no mountain. Donovan. First there was a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is.
Oh, complex.
Yeah, gotta love Donovan. First we had a guest, and then we had no guest for 2 minutes, and now we have another guest. We're doing walking, talking, and writing this morning. On the second half of the show here, we have Stephen Bond Garvin, who's with the Historic Sandpoint Walking Tour, which has been set up, a publication set up by the City of Sandpoint Historic Commission.
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here and glad to talk about the walking tour brochure and the upcoming free tours we're giving on September 2nd and 9th.
Yeah. Your timing is exquisite because you're below the fold on the Bonner Bee this morning. Bonner Bee, you can read all about the walking tour below the fold.
Steve is everywhere people are today, on the radio.
Who knew?
The press.
Who knew?
Yeah. Front page. We were happy with that. Good timing. And thank you for having us in to promote this.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about the Sandpoint Historic Preservation Commission.
Yes, it's a city commission. And each of the members has to be voted in or approved by the city council and the mayor. And it's been operating in town for a number of years. And I joined a couple of years ago. And after Dan Hall had decided he had been there for a while, I became the new chair. And we took on this project for a historic walking tour brochure because the last one in Sandpoint was, I think, about 20 years ago.
So this brochure is almost brand new.
It is brand new.
And I've been seeing it in a number of places around town, but someone who's listening this morning wants to pick one up. Where can they find one?
City Hall, the Visitor Center, a number of the businesses around town, Vanderford's Bookstore, IPA, iCarts, the photographic gallery, you name it, probably 20 places, I'd say, around town.
I do want to say that the brochure is incredible with all of the different photographs and the descriptions of the venues. Who put it together?
Well, the commission entirely, but it was really mostly about half to two-thirds of the commission who were more active in doing all the research and putting it together. The production was handled by Cindy Pear, and she did a fantastic job with it. Jen Del Carlo did the design, and some of the other key members that really worked on this are Sue Graves, Linda Hutton, Bill Harp, Jackie Albright, Heather Upton from the museum, Carrie Logan, and Ryan Shea from the city, who is our liaison for the Historic Commission ongoing.
And there's obviously a lot of work here, a lot of archival resources that must come from the Historical Museum.
Yes, a lot of the research was done both with and at the History Museum and with Heather and their other staff. That was really, really helpful. It was a very long, grueling process. We also reached out to some community members who had extensive historic knowledge to vet things and see if we had correct information, correct names, things like that. And it was a lot of back and forth on that, more than we ever expected.
I've sat down with this brochure and a couple friends who have long, deep roots here. They've looked at it and they've kind of laughed and said, well, that building doesn't have this feature now, or it was added at that time. And it was a literal trip down memory lane for them. So I think it's got an appeal both to the longtime person who can look at it with fondness and fond memories, and someone's just moving to town and walking by that old building and wondering what it was.
Absolutely. Plus, we geared it very much for locals and visitors, somebody that might be stopping by for the weekend or whatever and interested in history or interested in some of the buildings, as well as you mentioned, locals that were familiar, also new people who relocate here. And it gives a real sense. And we have a couple of different walking tours and a fold-out map. And that's the downtown tour, by the way, will be the one that will be done on September 2nd and September 9th, starting outside the Panada at 10 a.m. each of those Saturdays and going till about noon.
That's the blue tour.
That's right. Thank you, Jim. It is the blue tour, the downtown tour.
This brochure has made it so easy. There's the green tour and the red tour. Do you want to talk briefly about the different tours that one can? One doesn't have to do all the sites in one day.
No, you can pick and choose. Again, the downtown blue tour is the downtown core business and retail area, including the Sandpoint Historic District, which is on the National Register. It's comprised of buildings that are hallmarks of our historic, bustling, and vibrant town, as it says in the brochure. Then the green tour is a visit to Lakeview Park, the Native Plant Garden, the museum, the Arboretum, and more outlying areas of South Sandpoint there. And then the red tour is South Sandpoint specifically, and it focuses on the south side and a more extensive scenic tour, including some private residences and lake views. So you can mix and match as your wish.
As you choose. But this Saturday, the 2nd, and then a week later, the 9th, there will be the blue tour, which essentially is downtown.
Yes.
And that's at 10 a.m. at the Panada Theater, starting there. And who's going to lead that tour?
Various members of the Historic Commission.
Wonderful. Let's hope that it's good weather.
And the tour is free, open to the public, or by donation?
Free and open to the public. But while we're on that topic, we are a city commission. We had a $300 annual budget from the city, and we determined that we would need at least $3,500 when we started this project. We started by some of fundraising at the 100th birthday celebration for the Amtrak Depot last fall, and then we went on from there. And on the fold-out map on the back, we have 12 local businesses or organizations that bought a small business card ad to help pay for it. We ended up needing close to $4,000 for the initial 2,000 copies of this very well-done brochure and design and everything. But a lot of people donated time and effort and their labor, and that really helped keep the cost down. However, it's been so popular already, and it's in the visitor center, as we mentioned. It's also in visitor center in Coeur d'Alene and Bonner's Ferry, too, that we are now facing reprint already. We still have some, but we're running out fast, especially summertime. So we're going to need sponsors to help pay for the reprint. That's really, really important here. We raised all the money the first time, but we're going to need some sponsors, and we'll have ways to insert them into the inside front cover if they're not existing sponsors there. And that's going to be critically important. So if anybody's interested, they could contact Ryan Shea at the City Hall. His information is 208-263-3370. He's in the planning department, and he's the liaison to the Historic Commission.
This is a great way for a business or an organization to rally behind the history of the city. Again, that is Ryan Shea at the Sandpoint Planning Department, and the phone number is 208-263-3370.
Thank you, Jim.
And I would suppose individuals can donate even without the advertisement.
Yes, absolutely. Individuals, organizations, companies, businesses, whatever works.
I was going to say these two walking tours, one on the second, one on the ninth. It's a great family event. It would be super to bring along a grandma and grandpa who could probably have their own personal stories as well as young, young children to introduce them to the vibrant history of this community.
That's a great idea, and I think one that would appeal across the generations.
I love that the Downtown Blue Tour numbered stops here are so many that they don't hardly even fit on the map. It must be almost every building along First looks like it must qualify.
Well, there are a number of them because the Downtown Historic District is on the National Register as a whole district. So it does encompass a lot of those classic buildings in Sandpoint.
One of the things I'm intrigued by, Steve, is this is a series where our radio station is a series of complexes where they have the buildings have been reshaped and rebuilt. And one of the inner offices has a big sign that says Butchers. And I'm absolutely intrigued because you'd never know that something like Butchers because it now has a front and it's part of an office structure. So I'm sure that there's stories like this, like I'd love to know where the Butchers, who the Butchers yeah. were, and because I'm sure that people don't know that there was a butcher
shop. Let's put the history sleuths and the commission to work to figure that out.
It's where multilingual computing is, you know, a whole wall that says that once was an outdoor sign, quite obviously, and I'm quite sure that the front and the shapes of these buildings has changed over the years.
Well, and I love that you mentioned that because look what they did with the winery with keeping one of those walls interior with the thing. Or look at the guy where it used to be Truby's. He's
The outside wall.
Yeah.
And they discovered that sign and renovated it. Incredible.
I'm glad that we keep some of those things in our town because that's an important way to link the past, the present, and the future for our wonderful community.
Yeah, responsible architects are trying to retrofit for all the modern standards and yet retain the historical flavor. It's a wonderful thing to see done so well. And how did you decide, or how did the commission decide which places to put in, and you know, how did you go through that process of determining which ones and then researching them?
It was a group effort, group project. After doing a lot of the research, they sifted down, sometimes as a matter of what information could be found, and then we actually put as many as we felt really were appropriate and then could fit into the 32-page brochure, which, by the way, booklet. It's 32 pages on heavy stock and with good illustrations as well as the fold-out map. So it really took extensive group research to sift through those things and then make the final list. Some of my favorites, if you don't mind, are the Panada itself, which to me represents the downtown, built in 1927, rescued in the 80s. And then what was called the Federal Building or the Library, that's now a title office, I believe, there on North 2nd. That's a really beautiful building. 401 Church. And the list goes on, but those are just a couple of my favorites. I don't know if you guys have some.
Oh, I do. I love the one for the Knights of Pythias. you know, there's a wooden street, and there's a wooden building, but there's a streetcar in the picture, and you can't imagine, you know, at a time with streetcars functioning here in Sandpoint. But the other one I like is the one of the Elks Lodge, and it shows a 4th of July parade with Elk members as far as the eye can see on either side of the street walking with umbrellas. And, you know, I don't know how many members there are to the Elks, but what a wonderful, I mean, presently, but what a wonderful rich history.
I would have to profess a fondness for the 219 Lounge.
See, we each have our favorites.
I'll be honest, but yeah, and it's not only for the obvious reasons, but also it's remained true to its roots. It's still the 219 Lounge.
Well, and it's fun to find sort of obscure things too. Like there's several former Sears Roebuck kit houses in town here from early part of the 20th century that you would never know. There's one right across from the museum, for instance. And we discovered a lot of things through doing the research to compile this So that the community would have a good asset going forward.
I enjoy just looking at the details of the photographs with the signs on the stores or the Star Hotel, things like that. You know, just in businesses that, as we all well know, businesses come and go, and they have some of them have a brief history, some burn brightly and then disappear. And but it's nice to have this photographic record.
There's some of the buildings photographed on here on page 4, the number 4 stop, 110 Main Street, Sandpoint City Hall. And look at the photo, and the cupola on the top of the building is gone. So when I first looked at it, I went, where is that building? I can't place it.
Right. And that's second in Main, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, second in Main, because it doesn't yep. have that large structure any longer. It looks
the music
different.
Conservatory is there right. on Sandpoint.
But you're right, the cupola is gone, yeah. and it takes a minute to...
Takes a minute to place it.
And it'd be sort of interesting, why did they remove it?
Good question.
You know, in terms of who made the decision, did the city make the decision to remove that cupola? And because it looks quite large
well, I have a
on
feeling
the picture.
It could have been some rowdy teenagers that took it down, because the description says that the cupola housed a bell and later a siren, and up until the 1970s, the siren blew curfew each evening at 10 p.m., Somebody Ooh. Didn't like the 10 p.m.
Get
curfew.
Get the riffraff off the streets of Sandpoint. Absolutely. But I take it some of these photographs are from the Bonner County Historical Society Museum, and other ones are fresh, are new.
Right, and from different research troves, I guess you'd say. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. the museum was instrumental in helping us. And while we're saying that briefly, if I may, we really want to thank the museum greatly, the members of the Historic Commission, community members who helped, also Eves Leaves, Idaho Poor Authority, Bonner General Health, Baxter's, Bonner County Daily Bee, Finn and McDonald, Vanderford's, The Powerhouse, iCarts, Mountain West Bank, Cedar Glen Gallery, and the Cedar Street Bistro. Plus, this really, in some ways, feels like it was kicked off when just a couple of years ago, Preservation Idaho, for the first time ever, held their annual Historic Preservation Awards, Orchids and Onions, here, and named several of the properties beneficiaries of that. Plus, we celebrated the restoration of the Amtrak Depot that same day. So we want to thank Preservation Idaho on that kickoff, too.
Well, what's so important is that in so many communities, historically rich buildings have just been torn down or removed from the face of. And what's really nice is a brochure like this. And people are investing in the community that the Panada will continue to be there and these other buildings will remain.
Like the building that the radio station is in.
Historic radio. So if someone can't make the tours coming up, the walking tours coming up, and they get a copy of this, any tips for them on how best to use it, how much time to allow, and where to put it into play?
When we give the tours this week and next weekend, we're thinking, you know, hour and a half for the downtown part. But you can do it at your own pace. You could make it longer with a number of stops. I think if you allowed an hour to two for that, it would be great. The other ones are more leisurely. But I think the important thing is to... utilize the opportunity. And also, I think in different seasons, you'd get a different sense of some of the properties.
I would also like to suggest what I do with Art Walk when there's numerous sites in town. During lunch hour, doing a couple. You don't have to do all of them at once and stretch out your enjoyment. And with this, I am just so impressed with this brochure, Steve. I mean, it is perfect in every which way. You know, pick a couple of the places. You know, spend some time, read the history. You know, you don't have to do it all in one fell swoop.
Yeah, this is something you can live with for a while, especially if you're local.
It's timeless in itself. And again, it wouldn't have been possible without the team of the commission, the Historic Museum, and just others in the community. This is truly a community effort.
Well, thank you for coming in this morning. We're about to wrap things up for this portion of the hour.
And again, September the 2nd this Saturday and September the 9th the next Saturday at 10 a.m.
Not 10 a.m.
10 p.m. is a different tour. At 10 a.m. in front of the Panada Theater, there will be a guided tour for a walking tour. I would say this is a great opportunity to learn more about your community.
Thanks to you guys. Thanks to KRFY for being a public and community station.
Thanks for coming
Steve. Thanks for coming in, Steve. Should we do a song or should we just jump right in?
No, we've got Roy Orbison queued up.
Roy Orbison is queued up because on this date In 1964, Roy Orbison released this song. Yeah, that is a song that was released on this date in 1964 by Roy Orbison, and it was his second number one single. His first one was Running Scared, but this is the man who brought us Only the Lonely Crying.
Now, that's not why you told me you wanted to play the song. You told me because my sisters were in the studio.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Pretty Woman. That's right. Richard Gere and Julia Roberts and your sisters. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And your mom.
My mom.
Your yes, mom. Talk about not a, forget talk my about mom. A pretty woman. You yeah. bet. Phil, we got a busy, as always, weekend coming up. What's on
we've
the agenda?
Well, we got a lot of stuff coming on this week, and if you love the Tuesday morning show, as we do here at KRFY, tune in tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. and join morning show hosts Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. Their guests will be the Lake Pendere School District Administrator Sean Woodward and Board of Trustee Chair Geraldine Lewis. They'll be giving an update on the upcoming school year. I think that's starting now.
Oh, it's right around the corner. Absolutely. And on Thursday morning, join Jim and Jack. That'd be me and Jack. And our guests on Thursday morning on the morning show are two high school students from Sandpoint High School to be talking about a raffle for a Subaru and where the money goes. And that should be fun.
Then we have Labor Day weekend. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But next Tuesday, Julie will be back in the saddle with me. We're trying to figure out right now which best guest to have come in that day. We've got a couple lined up.
That's if they survive a Labor Day weekend, which is the end of summer.
Dude, well, thank you for joining us today, Jim.
It's been great, Phil.
We've got a few events coming up that people should know about. Of course, it's a busy weekend, as always, in Sandpoint, almost year-round. I sometimes say summer, but really year-round. We should note that the Bonner County History Museum, who were large contributors to the book this morning, have their free first Saturday. That's on the 2nd. They're at 611 Ella. They host the free first Saturday, the first Saturday of every month. Everyone's invited to enjoy the museum free of charge. You can find out more about the Bonner County Museum at bonnercountyhistory.org. And of course, we talked about the two walking tours, but I think it's absolutely worth mentioning again.
Okay, September the 2nd, that's this Saturday, and September the 9th, the following Saturday at 10 a.m. in front of the Panada Theater, there will be a guided walking tour of downtown. And it'd be a great, if it's wonderful weather, if it's not pouring cats and dogs, which I could only hope, it would be wonderful for the whole family just to bring along the kids and bring along the aunts and uncles and grandparents and learn about our little community here.
And it sounds so chock full that it's not either or. You could come to both the one on the 2nd and the one the following weekend on the 9th.
Absolutely.
And you probably learn a lot that you forgot in between. On the 29th, that would be coming up towards this weekend, Idaho Conservation League's After Hours program is How Clean Is Our Water? So enjoy a free beer. Who doesn't like
Can't
that?
Can't beat that.
And learn about how well Sandpoint's wastewater treatment plant cleans our water during the Idaho Conservation League After Hours event from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Sandpoint Events Center, 102 Euclid Avenue. ICL Program Director Justin Hayes will present a report on sewage treatment plants around the state and how well they performed over the last 3 years. There's no need to RSVP.
That's tonight.
Yep, that is tonight. No RSVP, no scientific background, just come and learn
Perfect.
And enjoy.
Perfect.
And we have, of course, this is the Fall Fest weekend at Schweitzer.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Always the first weekend in, or the Labor Day weekend.
Okay.
Huge event. The 25th annual Fall Fest at Schweitzer Mountain Resort features live music performances all weekend long, chairlift rides, kids activities, and more than 100 microbrews and ciders under a large tent.
Wow.
We were up at the village yesterday just looking around, and fall's definitely coming on.
Well, I have a feeling that with the lack of rain and the dryness that we're going to see like fall, like right around the corner, like right here, we need moisture everywhere. Well, not everywhere, not in certain parts of Texas, but up here we do.
We could have used some of theirs. It's been a long, dry summer.
Boy, it sure has, Phil.
Well, today is also Michael Jackson's birthday. He was born on this day in 1958.
Oh, my goodness.
So we've got a little Michael Jackson queued up to take us out for the hour. It's been wonderful. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. And maybe we'll do it again.
Thank you, Jim.